Chris?
Well, hi, everybody. My name's Danny Beach, and I'm an alcoholic. How are you all doing? Well, it's great to be back here and to see all of you on our ninth week. Three more, and I'm out of here. I always make these comments at the beginning, in case you haven't been here before, and that is, this is not a step class or how to work the steps or Joe and Charlie or anything like that. It's merely somebody who's been around a long time has some stories that may get across the principles behind the various steps, and they may be useful in your grasping what we're trying to accomplish here. And other than that, we're just here to have fun. We're also adding in some stories about the history of AA and a few other things. And so that's sort of the setup. And let me get started. There isn't much in the 70s. I made some notes about we've gone through the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and so now we're at the 70s. In 1970, they had the International Convention in Miami, which was AA's 35th year, and the theme was unity, and Bill Wilson gave his last talk. He was quite ill with emphysema, and he was scheduled to speak, and then the word was around, he's not going to be able to make it. He's not going to be able to make it. And my friend Clancy was there, and he was talking to another old-timer, older than Clancy, and Clancy was saying, well, it looks like he's just too weak to talk. And the other guy said, he'll talk. Guarantee you, he will talk. And I'll be darned, at the last minute, the ambulance pulls up. And Bill gets out and gives his talk, and they took him off stage, and he went away, and Clancy said, well, how did you know? How did you know? And he said, well, in 1950, Dr. Bob got out of his deathbed and gave his last talk at the convention in Cleveland, and I knew Bill wasn't going to let that happen where he wasn't going to go give his talk. And so shortly thereafter, on January 24th, 1971, Bill passed away. And we owe a great deal to Dr. Bob and to Bill. And I just am such an admirer of Bill, and one of my greatest regrets is that my friends in Washington go up to the Bill Wilson dinner every year, and I wouldn't, they'd ask me to go, and I'd say, I don't have enough money. Probably would have cost $70 or something like that to go up. And so they'd go, and then they'd ask me the next year and the next year, and I remember my friend Hal saying, you know, he's not going to last forever, and you're going to really regret that you never met him. Ask me if I regret it. Man, I mean, that would have been such an honor. But it didn't happen. 1972, we started our archives in the central the General Service Office, and Nell Wing, who is took over as Bill's secretary, did a wonderful job of setting up wonderful archives. And she's passed away, but there's someone else taking her place. I understand is really a professional, and so I look forward to that my next visit up there. It's really great. If you go there, be sure and look at the archives. They've got newspaper stories from all the way back to first time AA was mentioned in the newspapers. Oddly enough, on the same page was a story about somebody over in Germany that was rising up and was going to save the country. And I often thought about, there it is, on the front page of the New York Times, this thing called AA and this thing called Hitler. And you talk about a good and evil appearing all at once. And the amount of good that's been done by AA is just immeasurable. The next year, Came to Believe got published. And our big book reached 1 million copies. And they had a ceremony in the White House and gave it to President Nixon, who probably should have read it. Just observing, I'm not taking his inventory. And then at 75, Living Sober was published, and that's the second biggest seller after the Big Book. It's really popular amongst AA members. 1976, the third edition came out, and in 78, 2 million Big Books. So it only took 4 years to go from 1 million to 2 million. And that, you know, and it took all those years to get there. And then 1979, Ernest Kurtz came out with his wonderful history book, Not God, where he did a PhD dissertation on our fellowship, and it is one of the better analysis of the dynamics of our history. And it's well worth reading when you get to that stage where you want to get interested in history. Now, there was another story that I wanted to talk about tonight, and then I'll get to the ninth step. And I'll tell you some stories. When I was in the Marine Corps many years ago, we had I was on a presentation team that traveled around the country and even the world giving a overview of the Marine Corps and how it would be in the future. And so they had a hypothetical situation. Oddly enough, way back then it was set in the Middle East. And Huntley Brinkley introduced it, and it was, you know, the general was the head of it, and then we went through, and it showed all of the weapons, the fighter planes, the tanks, the artillery, the communications, the supply, and it was just this whole thing with slides and movies. Took about 8 hours to show the enormity of the operation with the Navy ships and all of that. And at the end of the show, the general would come out and he would say, "Ladies and gentlemen, all of the things you've seen, all of this, only serves one purpose." And then they'd flash a slide of a Marine infantry, E1 or E2, with a rifle, and he would say, "To make his job easier." That's the whole point. That's what all the supply line, everything was to make his job easier, because that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where everything gets done. And the reason I tell that is to make an analogy to Alcoholics Anonymous. That in Alcoholics Anonymous, we have, as we just talked about, the General Service Office, General Service Conference, we have international activities, we have publications and pamphlets, we have intergroup offices, we have, I don't know, 1 million or 200,000 groups, I'm losing track of that, and we're in over 100 countries. So we have this enormous activity known as AA, the big mothership known as Alcoholics Anonymous. And when you think about it, all of that is just there to facilitate and enable one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. That's where it happens. That is why AA works. It is all the rest of it just supports that. Our clubs, our dances, all of that just supports that. And the reason I bring that up is that it is absolutely essential to understand what the process of identification is. Because identification is how a new alcoholic connects to AA in a way that glues them in with sufficient bonding effect so that they're safe from alcohol. And when you think about it, if you are going to go see a therapist about your alcoholism, you go in the office and the therapist says, well, tell me all about you. Tell me all about you. But when AAs go on a 12-step call to a new person, they go, let us tell you all about us. It's exactly the opposite. And we just sit there and tell our entire story. And sometimes we'll bring two people. And two people will tell their entire story. And then, when I got sober, we went to just speaker meetings for at least 3 months before we went to a discussion meeting so that we would hear stories so that we could identify. And finally, the old saying was, somebody told my story. And they stood up there and they just, well, they hit the vodka in the toilet and they did this and they, my God, that's exactly the same, so that I felt this 100% connection with the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and with the person that was going to help me. And as a sponsor, I also make the same bonding with the new alcoholic. And I can remember the first time I went on a 12-step call for a periodic. And he told me that sometimes he stayed sober for 2 months before he drank again. And I went, I don't know anything about that. I don't know what he's talking about. So I went back to my sponsor and he says, well, we got a couple of periodics in the group, so we're going to help. They're going to go with you the next time, and then there'll be this connection that is made. So I'm just telling you that I had this feeling that I was the wrong person to talk to, a periodic, because we weren't exactly the same. And it's that exact sameness that creates the bond that keeps us sober when Dr. Alcohol comes knocking on the door. And so that's a very important thing. And back then, 50% of the people who came to AA never drank again. And 75% would slip around a little bit and then they would never drink again. And of the other 25%, some of those made it. I think I had 4 months before I heard about a slip. You know what I mean? I said, what's that? Somebody out in Manassas. I said, what is that? And my sponsor said, you're not allowed to have one. So I get faked into thinking that there were classes of people, those allowed to have one and those that weren't. And anytime I thought about having a drink, I went, oh, I'm not allowed. Gee whiz. I got sober with the two other guys. We called ourselves a class of 64, and I'm the only one left. I just was up for a memorial service. But all three of us never took a drink. Now, I'm just laying the groundwork here. And I'll make this point. Back then, everyone was dual addicted. All of the meetings were smoking meetings. All of them. And smoking set up a craving that you could hardly get through the meeting. I mean, it just was such a thing. You had to get money, you had to steal cigarettes if you didn't have one. And we knew it was killing us. It killed a whole bunch of AAs. Still does. Killed Bill Wilson. It's a fatal addiction. But no one tried to use AA to stop smoking. We didn't identify ourselves as alcoholics and nicotine addicts and then have someone who's a alcoholic non-smoker sponsoring an alcoholic smoker so that they could feel different from one another. It wasn't brought into the equation. We used AA principles to stop smoking, but outside of AA. In other words, everything was kept just alcohol. Now, I come up with the analogy of our space shuttle, which is kind of like the big mothership of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the thing that's been making the headlines over the past few years are the tiles that are coming off. And those tiles are put on there to protect it from temperatures from minus 1,000 up to plus 3,000, mostly during reentry, when the stress is the greatest. And there's great consternation when that happens, because if enough of them come off, it could endanger the whole ship. So when it happens, they go to the manufacturer and they really raise hell. They said, "You didn't bond this; they weren't put on right. The bonding was not adequate to withstand the turmoil of the reentry." And the manufacturer has to go along with that. He doesn't say, "No, it wasn't that. The Earth's atmosphere has changed. And there's more friction in the atmosphere now, and that's what's causing them to go off." No, it's the bonding wasn't tight enough. And so we hear a lot about, well, today's world, addiction is different than it used to be. And that's why the percentage is dropping. And that's why so many people, the percentages aren't as high. And so we take that into account and we just go, well, must be something else. But I'll submit to you that it is the bonding to this program that is going to protect each one of us during reentry. When the rubber meets the road, am I going to be held tight enough to not go flying off into alcoholism space out there? And so I just am bringing that up as a thought on that. And if you want to find out what's been written about it, I would suggest something that Bill Wilson wrote, which is called Problems Other Than Alcohol. And he thought, I mean, back then they had pill addicts, there's lots of drug problems. And so he thought carefully about what AA should do about all these things. And he wrote this pamphlet. And as you know, the decision was made to make AA itself exclusive and to give authorization to anybody with a different type of problem permission to use AA's 12 steps. And we have 100 other problems, over 100, that are using the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And there is absolutely no problem if five or six alcoholic drug addicts wanted to form a group of alcoholic drug addicts. It just wouldn't be an AA meeting. It'd be the same steps. It would be the same everything. But when they met, they would be bonding perfectly. And so we're back to our situation. And I'll give you one final analogy. When you have a magnifying glass, you can use it to read small print. But you can also use it to start a fire. You can use the power of the sun to actually cause small twigs and leaves to ignite and start a fire. And I'm going to call that fire a spiritual awakening. Now, that's done by taking the magnifying glass and bringing the circle of light down to a pinpoint, down to the tiniest possible spot. And then, boom, it would be possible to move the magnifying glass in a little bit and have a spot about an inch or an inch and a half in diameter, which would make the ground right there much warmer than it was. It would be kind of warm and fuzzy. And it would be more inclusive. You could include more of the ground getting warm. And we can do the same thing. We can open the doors wider and wider and have a bigger segment of the population feel wonderfully warm, welcome, and fuzzy, and hugs, and dances, and all of the wonderful things. But when reentry takes place, warm and fuzzy won't cut it. It's just not going to work. We're going to go... And so I just want to make a pitch for this particular topic. I imagine an AA dance, and I imagine people having the most wonderful time. And for purposes of my story, I got a lady named Mary. She's got 8 months. She's never felt happier in her life. Being in this fellowship has made her appreciate life like she's never appreciated it before. And she has new friends. And she just has a new purpose and feels just wonderful about herself. No intention of drinking. She's just at the dance. And a black car pulls up like the Batmobile. And a guy gets out, and we're nervous already as he gets out of the car. You know, he's kind of tall, dark, mysterious, with a cape. And he comes into the dance, and you can see everybody at the dance kind of go, whoa, who is that? And he looks at his dance card and goes right over to Mary, taps her on the shoulder, and she turns around, and he said, "Hi, my name is John Barleycorn. May I cut in?" And there's a kind of a warning feeling in her gut, but she says, "Sure." And they dance a couple dances, and he says, "Why don't we get out of here and go really have some fun?" And she drives off in his car, and maybe 6 months later, even 6 years later, the car pulls back up, and she's dropped on the road, half dead. There wasn't any protection when the disease knocks. And the difference, when the bonding is complete, and we've been led to an awakening, the same situation happens, and the same car pulls up, and the same Barleycorn comes over with the dance card with Mary's name on it. He taps her on the shoulder, she turns around, and John Barleycorn sees God standing there and says, "Oh, never mind," and leaves. And she's completely unaware that there was ever any danger or of what could have possibly happened. She was dancing in a position of neutrality. That car could pull up 50 times a night and she'd just stay there dancing, having a wonderful time. And so I just offered up to think about, because I'm old. I'm not going to, you know, AA's done well for 72 years, and it's done well by me for 42 years, but you guys are going to be around a lot longer than that. And I'm just asking you to think about this mothership and how tight the tiles are, because I was up in Maine a couple of weeks ago, and I gave a modified version of this little pitch. And afterwards, there are several irate people who came up to read me the riot act. And one of them was a young lady who said I'd ruined her life. She said, I joined OA some time ago, and it didn't work at all. So I went to AA. I went to an AA group. I asked them to have a group conscience that I could become a full-fledged member, and they agreed. And now I can sponsor alcoholics. And I said, well, we're really not discussing the fifth tradition here, primary purpose. We're now discussing the fourth tradition, which each group is autonomous. And that means that any AA group can do something really stupid. Ha, 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 ha just like the Richmond group did when they served booze at meetings. It just didn't last very long, and it didn't work. I was just working with a new guy. He's not here tonight. And we spent a lot of time on the first step and identification until I felt that I absolutely was connected with him and he was connected with me. And then I said, okay, now we're ready to go through the rest of the steps for the spiritual awakening. And he said, you really think it'll happen? And I said, well, let me put it this way. I'm as sure that it'll happen as I am when I put water in the freezer that it'll turn into ice. I can't guarantee it, but I'm pretty damn sure it's going to turn into ice. And so I leave you with that thought. It's your mothership, and you're going to be the ones 30 years from now, and maybe the whole fellowship will be going through a turmoil, I don't know, some kind of inner disputes or getting in trouble. The Washington Post just had a big story about an AA group in Washington that really did some bad stuff. And as the mothership goes through some kind of a major challenge, will the individual tiles stay on? That's all I'm asking. Will they stay on? Will they be bonded tight enough like we're talking about? Or not. So anyway, thanks for letting me get that little thing out of the way, and I will never bring it up again, ever, ever, ever. So we'll move over to what we've been talking about in our spiritual principles, in our 12 steps. And as you know, if you've been coming here, for sake of illustration, we've been comparing ourselves to slide projectors. I don't know where that came from, but... And we decided that as slide projectors, we projected up on a screen, which was the real world, and then the stuff we saw up there became disturbing, unfair, caused us resentment, made us angry, and we went up to the screen and tried to change things. That was our pattern before we got here. We went out in the world, we looked out there, we saw what needed to be changed, and then we went out and tried to change it. And we got more resentful, more frustrated, and more drunk. And then we came into AA and they said, stop trying to fix that. That's not the cause of the problem. The problem is in the projection booth. The problem is in the stuff you're projecting up there. If we fix what's in here, you're going to love what you see up there. And we talked about the fact that these slides that are causing all these problems are made by thinking. That's how you manufacture slides. Well, I got to put a slide together. Let me think for a moment. Wow, that sucks. This is no good. I don't like him. Put it on there. Boom. Look at that. Wow. There's a terrible situation up there, and now I feel bad about it. Now I can react emotionally to what I just saw up there, which I created by thinking about it. And so in AA, we have a saying that problems are of our own making, and that's how we make them. I just swear that if something's bothering you, there ought to be a law that you're not allowed to think about it. Anything else you want, but do not think about it. Because in reality, thinking about a problem is like pouring gasoline on it. It's going to get bigger and bigger and much more disturbing, whereas if you had ignored it, it probably would have burned out of its own lack of fuel. But it's very hard for us to believe that. And so we just talk about it. And I think the last time I was saying, I said, you know, your thinking's not reliable. It's, remember, somebody, you've heard that if you're new. Your thinking's just not reliable. It's just not. You really shouldn't trust it. You really shouldn't. So what do you think about that? I don't know. I think I'll have to think about that one and see what, you see what I mean? In other words, no matter what it is, our ego tells us that the answer is to think about it. And then we come in here and we're getting closer and closer to the not thinking, to just meditating, praying, and living, and just go through life and not think about it, not react to it, not editorialize on it. That is so hard for us to do, for human beings, to not see someone and then editorialize on them. Oh, look at that guy. What kind of a stupid shirt is that? What is that? Why can't we just go, well, there's him, and there's her, and there's him. Well, we got some little editorial comment about everything. About the room we're in, about the coffee, about whatever it is. And we play those in our head and drive ourselves crazy. And so this exercise of the 12 steps is to find out what all these problems are and to have our higher power remove them. And we've been through the inventory and the sharing with our sponsor, and then becoming entirely willing to have these slides removed. And we get into what looks like just sort of an afterthought, and that is to go back and take a look at the past and see what kind of harm we may have done others. And we have no idea that this is where the major, major changes are made in what we're going to see up on the screen. Because we're going to go into the booth and start looking at all the slides that we have where there was a conflict with someone else, which is almost all the slides. We got a few resentments with the IRS and the government or something like that, but almost everything else has to do with people. Only this time, instead of very carefully keeping track of what they did to us, we're going to use the magic eraser of forgiveness, and we're only going to focus on what harm could I have done them? How did I cause their day to be less pleasant as a result of me coming by? And before we get here, Bill writes in the big book that we have the power to bring out the worst in people. That's our specialty. Never saw that guy misbehave before? Watch this. Are you telling me that man never lost his temper before he met me? Isn't that amazing what I can do? So we are creating quite a world to live in, because the world is composed of other people and we're bringing out the worst in them. It's no wonder we drink. It's such a rotten world. But until we get the slide projector and open it, we don't realize we're putting it together in here. Well, I'm going to make a crappy day for me. Just a second. Now watch this. Oh my God, that's awful. I think I'll have a drink. We think that it's all happening out there, that the problems and the things that are bothering us and everything is up there. It's like we're playing a joke on ourselves. It's like our ego is the practical joker and we're the butt of the joke. It's just the same as if he just pulled the rug out from under me. And then I know I'm doing it, but I do it anyway. So now we start this amends process. And it is a very powerful eraser of the past events. It is one of the hardest things for the human ego to do, to admit that it's wrong, and to go not knowing what's going to happen, and deal with things that we've been carrying around. They wouldn't be on our list if we weren't carrying them around. This list of harm we did others doesn't come from letters from people going, add me to the list. We're already carrying it. We carry it around day and night, the harm we've done others. Because there's part of us that doesn't want to harm people. And that's the part we want to get to know. But how do we know what's going to happen when we go make these amends? And that's when Bill writes, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. And this is a huge risk. I remember that story about the man who had robbed the 10 homes and told his sponsor he didn't want to go there. And he said, all right, let's try staying sober without going there. And a few years went by, and finally he said, I can't take it anymore. I got to go see all those people whose homes I broke into. And maybe you've heard this story, but he went there. The sponsor told the story. And the sponsor went with him. They went at 6 o'clock at night. He pulled up and he coached them to say, I'm the man who broke into your house 5 years ago and took a whole bunch of your stuff. I'll be glad to wait here if you want to call the cops, but I'm in AA. I'm a sober alcoholic now, and I'm trying to make amends. Now, those people could have called the cops. He could have gone right to jail, but he had to do that in order to stay sober, because his mind would not allow him the peace until he had done it. And he tried it for a couple of years. And the story goes that each one of them did not call the cops. Some of them just said, I'm so glad you came back to tell me who it was that I'm going to just let it go. Other people said, well, I'd like some financial reimbursement, $500. And he'd say, well, I can pay $25 a week. And he made all the settlements till he got to the last house. And the lady answered the door and he told her what the situation was. And then he said, I'd like to make amends. And she said, you already did. And he didn't understand what she was saying. And so she got her husband and said, tell my husband what you just told me. And so he told him. And they both said the same thing. Oh, my God, you have really made amends to us. And when he asked them what it was, they said, until you came up tonight, we have always believed that our son did it and was lying. And now we know that we were wrong, and we can. And the family was reunited through that process. And in my own life, I had a story like that. And I've been sober about 25 years. And, you know, the memory bubbles will sometimes come booping up, and then you got one more amend to make. And if you've heard this story, I was getting ready to watch the Redskins play up in Washington, which is a big deal, like watching the Bucks down here. And I'd gotten everything done, so now I'm in my little townhouse, and I got Coca-Cola's, potato chips, and the whole deal, and it's about 10 minutes till game time, and here comes this memory bubble. Hey, you remember Bill Marseille? You went to flight school with, and how you'd always be broke and you'd have to borrow the rent money from him, but then on payday you'd pay him back. And good drinking buddy and all that. Well, you remember the time that you didn't pay him? And I went, not until now I didn't remember, but I do. Yeah, I remember he got transferred ahead of me to the next duty station. I said, I'll catch you when we get, and then when I got there it never got brought up and around. So it was $70. And I said, where am I going to find Bill Marseille? I don't know where he is. I haven't got a clue. Well, why don't you look? I'm not going to look. The Redskin game is coming on. And I'm having this conflict with my own conscience, and it won't let up. And I said, it's Sunday. I can't call the Marine Corps and find out. Well, think about it. What did he do? Think about it. Well, he liked to ski. Okay, well, then try someplace where they ski. Well, where do they ski? I don't know. They ski Colorado, I think they ski. Vermont, they ski. Well, try Vermont. All right, I'll try it. And then I remember it was really getting annoying. I said, I'm going to try Vermont, and that's it. If he's not there, screw it. I'll do it later. So I call the information. He had a long name, William P. Marseille the Third, and I call information in Vermont. Is there a William P.? There is? All right, what's the number? What's the number? What's the number? So now I'm dialing the number because it's just like 3 minutes to kickoff. I say, he won't be in. What are the odds on him being in? He won't be in, but at least I dialed the number. So shut up and hello? Hello, Bill? Yeah. Oh. Hey, Sandy Beach, remember me? Oh, yeah, Sandy, how are you? Oh, geez. La, la, la. Listen, Bill, I got to get right to the point here. I joined AA a long time ago, and it's really wonderful. It's just the greatest thing in the world, but we make amends. And, geez, I just had this memory bubble of the $70 that I owed you. And he said, well, I really vaguely remember it. Just forget it. No, I can't forget it, Bill. I got to send it up there. What's your address? So he gave me the address up in Vermont, and he ran a gift shop at a ski resort. So anyway, I just told him how happy I was and how well things are going. Then I said, I got to go, Bill. I'll call you some other time. And I hung up. And then a few days later, I added like $250 to the thing for interest and mailed it off. And geez, about 2 weeks after that, I get a box from the gift shop. Probably had $400 worth of stuff that he sent down. And then he called me once and said he was moving to North Carolina and we ought to get together, and I had the phone number, and then it just went out the window. And about, I guess 8 years later, I was speaking in North Carolina. And at the end of the talk, people come up and they thank you. And this lady came up and said, I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Kathy Marseille. And such an unusual name. I said, oh, Bill Marseille's wife. She said, no, his widow. I said, oh, I'm so sorry. And then I looked at her and I said, what are you doing here? She said, I'm an Al-Anon. After you called him and told him how wonderful AA was and what it had done for you, he joined. And he had 5 years when he died. And so the all amends are part of a bigger picture that we haven't got a clue about. And they will be revealed as we take the courage to go out and do this very thoroughly. After discussing it with our sponsor to get the most harmonious way to do the amends. And then we do it. And something unbelievable happens to those slides and the world that we lived in. That we live in. And so I wrote it down. Some of you may have heard about them. I don't know about these particular slides. We're going to look up there and see a new freedom and a new happiness that wasn't there before. We'd never even seen it before. All we were doing was knocking on doors, making amends. And then we're going to look up and see that the past has no power over us. It's been completely lifted. How many of us carry burdens from the past? And now we have no regrets about it. It's an open book. That wasn't up there before. There's a whole new reality that is being revealed as the result of following these steps. We look up and for the first time see serenity and peace. Serenity and peace. Just from calling somebody up and saying, I'm sorry? Well, that's what God asked us to do, and this is what He decided to give us as a result of that. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. How about that? Self-pity will disappear. Can you see the slide of self-pity and then the paint removers coming over it and it just turns into liquid and just, it just gets washes off of there? It just isn't there. These verbs are very unusual verbs. They're very spiritual. Will disappear. self-seeking will slip away. That's even more amazing. It doesn't get figured out. We don't suddenly learn how to be not selfish. It just deserts us. It just goes out the back. That's the amazing part of this. We're not directly trying to have any of this happen. We're just doing these stupid things that our sponsor asks us to do. That's all we're doing. And the booth is getting cleaned out and being transformed. How about our whole attitude and outlook will change? You know how big that is? What that means is everything that you used to see when you got up and walked out the door is gone, and there's a whole new thing to see when you walk out there. That's remarkable. This is not small stuff. Fear of people, fear of losing money, disappear. We suddenly realize that we're getting answers from a different place, from our intuitions. And they can only be activated when we let go. So every time, that's why we let go. Oh, I got this thing I'm agonizing over. Stop agonizing. Let it go. Go to the movies. Write a poem. Go sit down and write an 8-line poem about flying. And allow God to contact you through your intuitions. And this happens all the time. Oh, I know. It's just, we weren't even working on it. And then it occurs to you, here's the answer. And that's our highest level. That's where we operate when we're not disturbed. And then the jackpot is, we suddenly realize God's doing this. Now, up till then, God was something we knew about. We had read about Him. We had gone to a church and we knew all about Him. We knew when He was born, the miracles, we knew this, we knew that. And we knew more about Him than anybody else in the Sunday school class. But we never had contact until now. And when it says we suddenly realize, that's what we see. The light of our higher power shines through us and produces a new world, and we're aware of it. And so we get back to the beginning of the big book where it says, the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. If that hasn't happened to you yet, you're missing out the whole point of the program. And it's all in the steps with a guide, with proper bonding and identification to go and experience. This is the jackpot. This is the awakening. And then we try to maintain it and try to expand it and try to share it. And so we've gone in. We didn't like the show. And instead of going up there, we went inside and followed this stuff. It's been around for a lot of years of transforming what's inside of us. And we transform the world. The one you live in. And that's all any human being can ever do is to transform the world that they live in from a very painful, uncomfortable, God damn it world into one where you can see and understand why you're alive, what the whole deal is, life makes sense, and we become a very small minority in the population of planet Earth that understands the world in this light. This is something that people would love, only they don't know it's missing. They think they need a new TV. And they're going to work on changing that screen until they die. And so we, the alcoholics, with that rotten thing that we became an alcoholic and were forced into this damn program called AA, we really were the chosen few. Somehow, whatever it is, said, I'm going to take that rotten crowd and I'm going to single them out for something special, provided they pass it on to the next person. So we really have a noble calling here. It's not just, oh, I'm going to hang around and go to a meeting. This is really a big deal. It's really fun. And I hope you all got the picture of how much fun it can be. We're at the end of the time. Thanks for your attention. And we're all... wrap it up with the Lord's Prayer for anybody who would care to join in.